Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Misty and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from 29 of the big books of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in our own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. They give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, and I must have this thing. So I was like really hyped to introduce our speaker, but what I'm going to do now, since the queen came in, all right, like a ball of wind, I am going to introduce Paige, who's going to introduce the speaker. So I'm going to give to you guys Paige. And I'm still really excited to hear your story.
Hi, everyone. I'm Paige, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Thank you for having me and Leslie here tonight. Leslie, man, she is a magical creature in human form, basically, to sum it up. She is pretty magical. She is a light. She spreads her light wherever she goes. She's not only a friend, she's a sister. I've known her for a very long time, which is really cool to be able up on this side of the street with her and helping each other grow in sobriety. She has faced a lot of things in sobriety, and she has always fought. And in the midst of everything in her sobriety journey, she doesn't give up on working with others and being a light. And I think she's amazing, and I can't wait for you to hear her story. Yay for Leslie. Yeah, thank you again, like I said, for that dose of validation there. I really need that, you know. My name is Leslie, and I'm an alcoholic. Hey, you guys. And my sobriety date is January 3rd, 2019, by the grace of God. It's so awesome. Thank you. Thank you. It hasn't been easy, but at the end of the day, too, I know all I have is today, right? One day. Oh, this moves. Let's not do that. I'm about to fall.
I forgot to warn you.
That's okay. I'm good. I won't touch you like that. All right. So, I'll just begin kind of like how it all started. Well, duh, I was born. June 20th, 1979. I really honestly, looking back at my childhood now, I'm starting to get, kind of have more memories, but I don't really have a lot, which I'll get to that in a second and why. But I do know that I grew up in a very loved home. I have a brother who's 2 years younger than me. Like, my mom never worked. She took care of us. My dad, good job, like, traveled and was home. I was very much a daddy's little girl, very much. And we went to church all the time. I was raised Catholic then, and it was like every Sunday school, outing, you know, communion, confirmation, like all of that stuff I was very much invested in. And that'll be important in a minute, too. So fast forward, living life, playing sports, you know, I do remember that. When I was 11, then I get to middle school, and I'm in sixth grade. My mom never left us alone. Like, ever. She was always there. Regardless of my dad, like, she was always there. And so she just, sorry, I got AD. I really like that. Sorry, it's like, it's light, it's lit. Anyways. I did not mean to say that to you. So I'm 11. My mom leaves because she's like PTA president. And she's like, I gotta go to Chapel Island. And so this was the first time my brother and I were left at home with our dad. And so we went to eat Mexican, which is funny because that Mexican place is still open today. That was our thing. And then we went to Walmart, and I really wanted to buy me this wheel thing for my hamster Binky. And he said no, and I was so mad at him because I was just like a little, you know, spoiled brat. So we get home. Brother goes upstairs. my dad hugs me, is like, I love you, and I'm like, I hate you. So that was kind of like, so I go to bed, right, and it's taken me a long time to forgive myself and understand that I was only 11. So mom's gone, basically, without all the, anyways, the next, my dad, we heard the alarm going off, wasn't getting up at all. So I went down there, and my brother followed suit, and my dad, we both had found him. He had died. He had passed away in the middle of the night. So that right there, and I've learned so much over the years about trauma and, like, how that affects us as people and how it affects people differently, because my brother reacted very differently than I did. And I remember that. Like, I remember that day. For years, and it always haunted me, because I'm like, why can't I remember any loving moments with my father? You know, like, there wasn't a lot of pictures back then, or my mom wasn't taking them, you know, a whole lot of me and my dad. But I did know, and I did remember, and I heard this all my life, that I'm just like him. Like, my mom was very reserved. My dad was not. He was very loud, and I remember he drank Coors Light all the time. So we had that in common, too. Not Coors Light, but I ended up liking to drink a lot, hence I'm here. So that, those years, middle school, a lot of high school, now I literally just don't even remember. I've learned over the years, and I went to trauma treatment, I'll get to that to the end, but like that was like my brain's way to a defense mechanism to like protect me. From all of this stuff that was going on. And nobody told me how to act, and I've learned this too over the years. I was so mad at my brother. He was angry. I mean, talking like chasing with knives. He was 9. He was treatment the first time at 14 years old. He went to prison for drugs. Anyways, he's good now and has a family. But then, you know, like, it wasn't good at all. And so I was mad at him. I was mad at my mom for all this stuff. And I realized that, like, nobody told me I had to just turn into this happy, lovely, take care of everybody. Everything's wonderful. I'm going to do great in school. I'm going to excel in sports. So that way I'm going to present great every single day. And everyone's just going to think I'm the best child ever, which wasn't the case, again, obviously. But that right there, those isms that I realized I had before, that perfectionist, that kind of codependency, so like all of this, started really growing in me. And I've learned that's the disease, right? Especially the genetic component, because Lord knows we have that on both sides. So anyways, go to high school, ended up getting I was like drinking and outside issuing for years while I was in high school, but I still managed to like keep it together. Got a basketball scholarship to Georgia Southwestern in South Georgia. I went there. I remember my mom dropped me off and was like, oh my God, I'm going to miss you. And that night I was like, we're getting drunk tonight. And that was kind of like my life. Like, I wasn't really doing very good in college then, but I still had basketball. And I really didn't give a shit about it, to be honest with you, like my freshman and sophomore year. Then comes junior year, and I'm so excited. I'm like, okay, I worked all summer. This is going to be it. And then I had some major health stuff come up and ended up at the Mayo Clinic for a week with my mom and grandmother because no one could figure it out, what was wrong with me. And it basically, which now I know even more, is that my trauma, and this is consistent through my life, manifests physically when emotionally and mentally I'm not okay. And I didn't know that. So, like, all these kidney stones in my life, like, my appendix almost ruptured, 3 surgeries for endometriosis. Like, it's crazy when I look back on my life and how everything went. You know, but that also tied me into being that victim, right? Like, I learned how to play that to a T, especially with my family. And when Dad died, we weren't close to his side of the family, but my mom's side of the family, we were. So we all became kind of like intermeshed. Like, we have such a close relationship, sometimes not so healthy, like with moms, but we've been working on that. But at the same time, I just lost my train of thought. What was I just saying? Oh, yeah. Thank you, Steve. You were listening. Thank you. Yes. Okay, thank you. I can tell you probably do, too. I'm just kidding. Okay, back to the reason why I'm here, to be of service. God, and to be a vessel for God. So my mom's family, we are all very codependent growing up. And I've learned that a lot of the things my mom did for us, me and my brother, that we manipulated her also into doing was she felt so guilty for not being there. So she was constantly helping us. I mean, enabling me and my brother all the time. She knows that now, but not then, you know. And after that happened with basketball, backwards again. I can't believe I forgot this. So I've also learned, too, that my disease not only shows up as alcoholism, drug addiction, but this whole thing, like this whole men issue, money issue. I call my M&Ms men and money. Like, that was it, like, with my, you know, drugs and alcohol issue. And so after that, the first boyfriend I had in high school, I thought he was so hot, because he was, but, like, I don't know, all those girls wanted him, so that's why I liked him, you know what I mean? And I don't think sometimes we talk enough in here, as, like, I know men are, but, like, as women, too, about all, there's a lot of other things, and can be men, but, you know, that go along a lot of times with how we end up here. And so, I remember David, he ended up liking me, and I was like, but then he was the first guy that ever hit me. He was very controlling. So I lied a lot to do whatever I wanted to do. He would find out. And at the time, looking back, I realized that, like, that self-worth piece, or how lost I was, that was already running its course this way, because that's kind of a theme throughout my life, is being in relationships that are completely toxic, abusive on every level. And it's just, I don't know, it's been a nightmare. And then I also, not anymore, though. We'll get to that. But also, one thing that happened after that was I started bartending, but that was, like, also the first time during that time that I was sexually assaulted. And that right there was, I didn't tell anybody for the very longest time. I'm not going to go into a whole bunch of, not going to go into details, but it was just extremely, there were some things that happened afterwards that caused me a lot of stress. And I just ramped up again, you know, like all the drinking and using. So parents are like, I get a DUI. And they're like, oh, 5 years down there. What have you done? Nothing. Okay, well, you're coming home. You know, and I ended up bartending again, you know, the only things to do that I like to do. And so I ended up going to like two other different colleges. And then at the end of the day, ended up going back down there to actually graduate with a health and PE degree. Which I think is kind of funny now, because I taught health. You know, don't drink, don't use drugs, don't have sex, don't do all these things, don't smoke cigarettes. You know, it was like, don't do any of those, and you don't know that I do all of those. You know what I mean? That's crazy. So I finally graduated after like 7 years from my undergrad, and I remember I was just so excited because my dad took like 7 years because he got kicked out of Georgia State for partying. So I was like, yeah, my dad's daughter, you know. My family was like, not too sure that's something you should be cheering about, but okay. So I started teaching, and I taught health for 7 years at Lanier Middle School up in Sugar Hill. And around, let me back up too, because back in high school, my mom ended up getting remarried to someone who eventually was an alcoholic and treated her like crap. So my poor mom's been my brother, my stepdad Hartwell, and then here I come, you know, the back end. It's literally a miracle she has not had a stroke. So during that time, again, manipulation, I'm teaching, getting sick, I'm calling out. I mean, I don't like to actually, like, I don't really go into stories like this, but I just have to tell you really quickly that I'll never forget one of the first times I was so hungover, because the Thursday night I went to Buckhead and thought, oh, yeah, I can get home at 3 and wake up at, like, 6:30, no. So I called my assistant principal. I'm like, oh, my God, my cavity just fell out. I have to go get a crown. I don't know when I'm going to be there. So I didn't get there until, like, after lunch. And then literally, I shit you not, 2 weeks to the day, I'm at school in the morning on bus duty in this protein bar drinking my coffee. And it's like, literally, my cavity fell out and I had to get a crown. That was like one of the first times I was like, I hear you up there. Like, I see what you're doing. But I also thought I was talking to my dad. Like, I didn't really, after that happened with Dad, I had a very, very hard time with, I used to always say, like, the long-haired, you know, Jesus. But, like, just in that in itself, because of what happened, I did not understand. How in the world, if there was a God, how could they let this happen? So anytime I was foxhole praying it or anything like that, it was always like my dad is my guardian angel. So basically, looking back now, I thought my life was manageable teaching. No, not at all, actually, when I look back and think about it. And it's just, you know, it's funny because when I was teaching, and I was also the basketball coach for a few years, too, I was going to school, like, I ended up getting a master's, I got married during this time, got divorced during this time, just didn't work out, wasn't a good idea. I married someone who I thought was safe because of all the abusive relationships, and then I realized, like, there's just a lot that's not there. Like, you're my best friend, but, you know, some of the other stuff, so we got divorced. He did not want to, but obviously I did, because I was like, and then Wild Child really started again. But, you know, one of the things, though, is while I was married is I realized, too, my alcoholism shows up as work, run yourself into the ground, get up, teach, be department head of Relay for Life, coach basketball, have to go to these extra meetings for school, I'm married, I get home late, you know, it's like I just, and then I'd sit outside, wouldn't even talk, and I'd, like, drink and smoke cigarettes and, like, call my friends about how, like, whoa, it was me, you know, back in the day. And I think about it now, and I was just like, man, was my disease really, really ramping up? And I remember the first time I ever told my story at Freedom Club, at one of their HA meetings on Saturday night. I was talking and, you know, woo-hoo, doing my God vessel thing and service thing. And I finally realized, because I went to school, got a master's, got my specialist degree, was going to be a principal, had already gotten accepted into the Leadership Academy for Gwinnett County Schools, all these student loans, and during telling my story, it hit me. I was like, holy shit. I know when that line was most definitely crossed, because I decided after all of this work and teaching and the degrees just keeping me busy, that, you know what, I really didn't want to teach anymore. I just was going to go back to bartending for a few years and then go back to school to be a medical esthetician so I can do, like, Botox, Juvederm, and look young forever, because my disease at that time was vain, very, very vain. But then also, too, as well, like, I had used and abused myself, right, putting myself in situations, using what I look like to get the things that I want, you know, being in horrible relationships. I had a lot of horrible things happened to me, like, even in relationships early on in my, like, well, high school and then through my 20s and stuff. And that just kind of continued when I went right back to, like, being a wild child again. And, so I don't know. That was kind of eye-opening for me, too. I was like, whew, that's where it really was. And so, yeah, so my whole family, the insanity, they just were floored. They had no idea how to do it. I just cashed my retirement in so I can just live life and live on my own and do whatever I want to. And that ultimately did not work either. And during this whole time, ever since I was like 20, I literally drank every single night. I remember one time I quit for 30 days, and I thought I was doing so good. But I was also taking a bunch of pills, too, and so I was feeling great, so I didn't really need to drink. So there was that. You know, I do have some guilt now because of the students that I taught. Like, I was moving not too long ago and finally getting all this stuff out of storage after, like, years. It's like, why pay $200 for 3 years for, like, a couch and some stuff when you could buy, like, a whole entire house for, I don't know, like, you could furnish a house for that. So, anyway, I ended up selling it. but not for alcohol or drugs. That's what was so great about it. Okay, but anyways, I found like this tub of like all this stuff from students and, you know, notes and like stuffed animals and like all of this stuff. And I sat there and I was like looking at it and I just had this like overwhelming rush of like guilt, you know, like I was not sober at school. I didn't drink, but I was taking stuff and snorting it on the student's desk in between classes, like, you know, like Adderall and stuff, and I'm trying to keep the purpose, but I know that's kind of, because alcohol was always my thing, but the outside issues kept revving it up and revving it up and revving it up, and that right there is what, together, almost killed me. Thank God it did not, by the grace of God. So during that time I'm bartending, going back to school, look good. Then I decided that I was like, oh, well, maybe I'm going to go bartend at this other place. It's a sports bar that's open till like 4. So basically my life was like, sleep until 1 or 2, get up, do a few things, drink some, go to work for hours, drinking there too. The boss really didn't care. And still not understanding, I did get a DUI in college. That was for my mom and then really come home. I think I mentioned that. But I just remember, too, my grandma was like, you pull that cat's tail one too many times, it's going to bite you in your ass. And because they knew that, like, I drove. They knew I was at school. They knew I was driving. This was, I mean, my parents, my mom and stepdad were not stupid. During this time, my brother is in prison for 5 felony charges. And, like, so they're mostly, like, dealing with that. So all of that for all those years gave me complete time to just kind of do whatever, and my family never knew. Like, they knew I drank. For a while, it was funny to be the functioning alcoholic, and then it wasn't, because there was no functioning at all going on. And so I just, you know, remember when, like, one day, when I was thinking about this, because my grandmother and my mom was just like, I just remember her shaking me, too, several times and being like, I wish I could take everything from you, like all the pain and the hurt, because I would throw it up in their face when they would want to, you know, of course, I wasn't using or drinking, no. You know, again, we all think no one knows when everybody knows, and they've known for a while, you know what I mean? And so during that time, ADD, I'll come back if I remember. Anyways, during that time when I was bartending and changed to the sports bar, I remember that it was really actually interesting because I was picking up a keg and like moving it and my back, I just felt it. I was like, so posterior angular tear. Anyways, had a back injury, was on bed rest for almost a year, like a back brace. But the meds galore, you know? So that was, and I had a doctor who probably is not even in business anymore. I would be shocked. Because that long ago, like 2013, 14, like, it, yeah. Oh, the pain was worse. Okay, breakthrough pain, you know? Like, oh, and then, like, not supposed to be drinking. So, you know, we all become, like, these scientists of, like, oh, I have to go give a sample when I see my doctor next. So, like, how many days and what's the half-life of this? And, like, do I think I can get around this? And it's, like, thinking back to the sanity of my brain because it ran constantly was just, it's thinking about it now, it's like, it's just, that's just what it is, right? The insanity of our disease, you know? And so after that, it, things got way, way worse. I was living back at home. Of course, I was like, mom, you know, this and that. And so it was actually kind of interesting, though, because right before I moved in with her, and not interesting in a good way, but looking back, putting myself, I don't blame myself, but being sexually assaulted again, it was like I was running with a lot of people, doing a lot of things that were not so great. Do I think that's okay? No. And it's taken me a long time to realize that, like, these are sick people, right? Like, normal people don't go around doing this, you know? And that took a lot of prayer to get there. The prayers didn't start out nice either, but they eventually changed. And that, so I learned that thing, that works too, right, when I'm just, like, praying for however it starts, you know, the love starts to overshadow and the peace and the forgiveness and understanding what's really, you know, going on and how it's about me too. And, like, during my four-step and stuff in a minute, like, They don't care. They don't remember. You know what I mean? Like, I'm holding on to all of this stuff for so many years. And so after that, my family finally was like, you're done. So I went to treatment the first time in 2014. Interesting. I should say interesting. I don't know why, because I never use that word ever. One thing that was crazy and such a God thing is that one night my mom's like, we're done. I can't watch you kill yourself. You have to leave, like, soon. And so I was upstairs, and I just remember I was just going to take, like, a whole bottle of pills and drink a bunch of wine, and I just did not want to wake up because I was so tired of waking up with, you know, alcohol withdrawals, other stuff going on, trying to manage my day. Like, can I drink in the morning? Do I need a drink in the morning or not? Or if I take this, or I can wait till this time. Like, it is just absolutely insane. But anyway, so I was up there. I fell asleep before I even, like, could ingest all of that. So I wake up the next morning. I'm, like, completely like that. And I walk downstairs, and literally my mother, my brother, he's the good one now. My mother, my brother, my grandma, my stepdad, my uncle, his wife Lisa, were all sitting downstairs. Because I didn't walk down there until, like, 11. And I knew I was like, but honestly, at that point, I was ready. I just wanted to die. Now I realize, like, that was a God thing. You know, like, how that whole thing happened, like, insane. So I ended up going to treatment because I finally was like, you know, I'm done, which I really had no idea. I knew about the disease. I knew about meetings. I'd been with my brother, you know, years before. But I still didn't realize how sick I really, really was. Because I didn't do anything that they told me to, you know? Because, like, during this time back again, like, I'm back with, like, abusive, you know, people. And not only realize yet that men are, like, my HP big time. And so that was, anyways. So I went to Ridgeview. I'm there for 30 days. Don't talk to men. Don't do anything you're not supposed to do. And so what is what we do? I'm like, oh, I see this guy that's really hot in the CA meeting. And I'm like, yep, his name was Brett. And so we ended up dating, which was a shit show. He had 5 months. I had, like, 25 days. I went to sober living at Hope Homes in Smyrna. I literally lied my whole way through it, said that I was going home all the time. I was going down. He lived with his parents again, like, his parents' house. He has a daughter. I was always down there, never at home seeing my family because, Mom, I can't leave. They don't want me to come back in that area yet, you know? And, like, again, the lying is still going on. And just not even looking back now, it's like, how did I not realize what was going on? But it's like, oh, I know because, you know, it's just my disease. And so, anyways, long story short, that just turned into a complete shit show. So we ended up breaking up like 9-10 months later. And then I ended up relapsing. And then I went back to 2015. I went to treatment again at Summit Ridge. And that, again, detox and PHP, IOP, and all that stuff. And I'm grasping the whole alcoholism thing a little more, but I'm not necessarily grasping either the whole men situation. And the reason why I bring this up, and the reason why I say this, and I am so passionate about this today, I'm at Summit Ridge. Meet this guy, and I mean, Nick. We both were just really sick. But we started dating because, you know, that's what I do. And so it ended up kind of being okay. And then there was he wasn't there one night, and there was this other guy at NA meeting. I was like, oh. So anyway, stuff happened, and so Nick, the guy that I initially met and was dating, called me one day. Blaming me for hurting him, and then he hung up on me, but then he sent me a text message that basically was like, you've ruined my life, I have no one else, like, I have nothing else to live for, how could you do this to me, I was so in love with you, I don't even remember how the end of it, but right after that, he shot up from dope and overdosed and died. So that is why, again, I am very passionate about the whole, like, newcomer, getting your shit together, staying out of relationships, because it is not healthy and it is not safe. And I had to learn that if I really wanted to stay sober, I had to completely, you know, cut that out. So I realized after that, what do you know? And so ended up back Summit Ridge for a while. Still wasn't really taking care of myself. On and off, I've been going to Serenity since 2014. I had realized that, like, at that point, kind of realized that, you know, it was God's grace that kept me here and not just my dad. But things got way worse. And I don't know. I mean, I wasn't a one white chip wonder. Obviously, I've been talking about that. But I will say that through all of the years, it was like I remember tidbits, right? Like, I eat tidbits from different, you know, places I've gone, treatment centers I've been to. And so my behaviors, and I know we talk about our drug and alcohol use just revving right up, you know, when that happens, but my behaviors, when I went back out that last time, was a nightmare. So embarrassed. And so anyways, I finally had that gift of desperation. That's what I'm getting to. I got to talk fast because it was. But I finally had that gift of desperation, and I finally understood what that meant. Because eventually there wasn't any amount of anything I could ingest that was making me feel any better at all, and I wasn't dying, and I was too scared to, like, off myself. So I was just, like, kept doing this. And then finally, like, I kind of had a realization after I ended up in the hospital and I had a TIA. And let me tell you, that was, like, the scariest probably 30 minutes, many strokes. That happened. And then after that, I still, they're like, major stroke, seizure, trying to get me 1014. Friend's a nurse, got me out. Anyways, crazy. But I ended up just going MIA for, like, 5 days. Still knowing at any point I could have a, you know, seizure, a stroke, didn't care. Until finally one day, and I know now it was God. Because, God, I love my dad, and I know he's been my guardian angel, but there is a force that is way more powerful. And so I might not know who my HP is then, but I damn sure knew that there was something, you know, because I was still alive. And so at that point, went to detox for like 14 days, came back home, ended up going to Kennesaw. Found a sober living over there, knew some people over there that worked there, so I went over there. By then, I had been lying on my step work, thinking I could just screw it over, like, not talk about trauma, and, like, it's just not there. And so I also learned, too, and I didn't really have a fellowship, I just like to hang out with people all the time, that not call them or any of that. So I knew what was important. So by the time I got there, as far as step work goes, I was more ready than ever. Yes, I know I'm powerless and unmanageable. Yes. Two, do I believe power in itself? Yes, I do, because obviously that's, you know, I feel like that's why I'm here, right? And then the third and fourth step where it talks about, you know, the whole point of the 12 steps, right, is to find a power greater than yourself, which doesn't mean you have to know right away, as long as it's just not you, you know, and I knew that from before, and I knew that, you know, third step prayer, but I was so ready for that fourth step, y'all. I finally found a sponsor that I really liked, and I was like, like, I just wanted to let everything out. And so the difference, I think, too, with that is that when I went into the fourth step that time, my attitude, completely different. I was like, look, I need to get all this out. I know I have plenty of defects, some I'm very well aware of, but others I have no idea about. So, like, I need you to tell me what that is wrong with me so I can actually be better, because I've seen women in this program flourish and thrive and see God, sunlight of the spirit, universe, whatever you want to call it, you know, working in women's lives. So I knew it would. I just had to surrender and finally be honest. And I finally reached that point. And I hope that I never forget what that was like. But anyway, so yeah, so we're working through the steps. Everything's good. I'm staying sober. I'm, like, doing all the sober things. I am, like, working part-time, volunteering at this place called The Zone part-time, and then working on myself. Because I get to Kennesaw and I do the assessment. It took 8 hours. And then my counselor, Brian, calls me in one day. There's like three other therapists and stuff in there. And I forget, he was like, Leslie, sit down. So I was like, okay. And he was like, you are really, like, effed up.
No shit, dude, that's why I'm here, you know? Like, I know that I am not okay, and I have several things that I need to work on. So I did. So I got through the steps. I started sponsoring women. I did some work in other fellowships to help with other areas of my life that really needed to me to take a look at. And then I got offered a chance to work in recovery, be a house manager. And so I was like, sure, I'll do that. You know, I lived here. You guys are wonderful. You know, I'm sober because of this place, like all this gratitude I had. Well, and I'm not saying that I don't now, but it was fun. It was a lot, but I enjoyed it. And I only had that job like 2 months when they came to me. And I think it was just because of like I was older and like my background, education, all that stuff. But Greg was like, hey, we got the perfect idea. We're going to move you over here and we want to make you a director and start your own Sober Women's Living program. Have everything from the ground up. The only difference is that program was the Suboxone-based program. And I, at that point, didn't really, you know, I was like, people just need to live because now I have, I was counting the other day, I wrote down, like 12 funerals since 2017, all related to alcoholism and addiction. It's funny, one of my little sisters, I called her Lori. We were inseparable for like 2 years. Yesterday was the 1 year anniversary of her dying from what is in pills today. So, I mean, it's so scary, and I am so grateful that I am not out there right now with mansions and everything, because I have no doubt I would be dead. No way I would still be standing here. And so that's a real thing, right? Like, it's fun joking, but at the end of the day, this is serious. Like, this is a disease, and you guys that are sitting here have the opportunity to not die and to live. Is it easy? No. I used to all the time, is it worth it? Yes. People, I'd always be like, I'm like better than my wildest dreams. And I'd be like, whatever, okay. But now it's like, I know, you know? And so basically I started that job, totally ran myself in the ground. A lot of PTSD came up. I was doing some trauma therapy, and I eventually relapsed. Thank God I didn't drink alcohol. It was an outside issue that had to do with my job. But, you know, I just had enough. Like, I was so tired. I wasn't taking care of my own recovery. All of my home group meetings were now these girls' meetings, and I'm, like, running everyone around. And I'll never forget, though, my recovery network out there that work in recovery sat me down really quickly. If you do not go handle this trauma, then good luck, you know, like, staying alive. So the scariest, but yet the most freest thing that I've ever done in my life that was so hard was I went to South Florida, flew into Miami, hour north for trauma treatment, mental health and trauma treatment for 2 months, hence the January 3rd. And the only reason I celebrated that and not sooner is because honesty, right? I'm on the plane going to Miami at 8 o'clock. Here comes the stewardess. Beer, wine, do you want a drink? All these people are raising their hand, and I'm like, I do. It was the grossest $12 glass of wine I think that I've ever had. But I did drink it. So I had to be honest when I came back, and a lot of my friends are like, that's so ridiculous. And I'm like, no, it doesn't matter. That's how serious I am about this. Like, I have to be completely honest. And just be grateful that during that time, I did not go back. Because if I had drank alcohol, y'all, no doubt I would be dead. Because that would have sent me a whole nother way. And I have heart issues and stuff now and, like, other things, neurological, other stuff where doctors are telling me, like, you don't have another chance, you know? Like, you're literally, your heart will not make it. And so that was definitely also, too, like, an eye-opener. So I came back, and basically this is why also a network is so important, y'all. I would not be standing up here today if I didn't have a network of people that let me live with them. Almost a year here, almost a year there, so I could focus on myself. I was having health stuff come up, surgeries. I had taken narcotics in the last, like, 4 years, five times the right way. did not spin me out. Like, I gave it to who I was staying with. They gave it to me. That was a miracle. Because I don't know about y'all, but I never took those like you were supposed to. That's why you give them to someone and you have a plan going into it, you know? And so I ended up doing a lot of work on myself and sponsoring women all the time. Like, I'm very much in service. My whole life is like, hey, hey, you know? And then it's kind of like, well, maybe we should do something different. I don't know. Put myself out there, whatever. I got into a relationship. Long story short, it was not good. But I learned through that first one, and Paige helped me a lot with this, because I had known her for years, but she let me come work for her during that time. She owns a house cleaning business, and it was amazing, because she was like my spiritual advisor. We laugh about it now. And like, I was like her therapist, because the interactions that we had together, it was such a God divine thing that I ended up helping her just when she needed it. That it's just unbelievable. Like, it blows my mind. Like, the spiritual awakenings I've had where it's like, I don't know necessarily what God is, but I can feel him. You know, like, I seek him, I feel him, I know. You know, I'm aware now. That's the gift of this program. Like, I'm aware that it's God. And I'm also aware that my disease, because I learned during that one time, loves to come back in. And I might not have a thought of drinking and using, but it ended up being where this relationship was so toxic. And I used to always say, I did not get sober and work my ass off, and God saved me to be in a place where I was years ago. But then there I was. And it took me getting to enough emotional pain. I don't know about y'all, but I've learned that, like, if I don't listen, God's like, here, just day by day, you know, just do the next right thing. And if I'm like not doing that, but I am also over here and my disease is feeding me crap, then, you know, I don't necessarily always believe that. But God, for this situation, it was like so much pain was caused, would go back. So much pain was caused, would go back. Then finally, I finally hit my knees and in desperation, too, of like, okay, God, I hear you, you know, like, this is, I hear what you're trying to say, this is not healthy, and you need to get out of that. And it's been interesting with relationships, too, in sobriety, because it's not easy, you know, at all. But the one thing you have to remember, and I have to remember, is that I have to take care of me first, because if I don't take care of me, I won't be showing up as a daughter, as a granddaughter, as a sister, you know, the things that I get to do today, the living amends that I get to make to people where I just have hurt them so bad in the past, especially with my family, and being able to show up for them, like, that has been such a miracle, too, because there's a lot of things that have happened over the years that if I wasn't sober for me to be the strong one in our family, then I don't know. It's just, God just has a way of putting you kind of like right where, you know, you are or where you need to be. And I'm so grateful that, you know, he did that. And then I had those people in my life that helped me along the way, because I had built a network up from before I got back out of Serenity. And that place just hugged me with warm arms every time I came back in, was not judgmental, was like, please stay, you know. And so I always felt extremely comfortable there. So I would go there all the time, home group, you know, sponsor, still having health stuff pop up, which I realized recently that I was doing Reiki, like Paige just Reiki, and I was doing that. And then after that, it wasn't a few weeks later after that, I think I just had like this realization that like, yeah, some of the health stuff was for real the last year and a half that I've been walking through. But some of it, when I don't take care of my program, manifests in a way that I believe, I literally believe in that moment that I feel like this. And it's so powerful. And that's what happened the last year and a half. I was doing my thing, loved being single for like the first time the last 2 years. I know my family like did not believe that I stayed out of relationships in Kennesaw for over a year. But it was true. And that's where I learned really like self-worth, you know, and I'll never forget. I sent a Snapchat to my sponsor one time and I was like, look, this guy just asked me for coffee. And, like, my response was, like, you know, it's just really not a good idea right now. Like, I'm focusing on myself. Maybe one day in, like, a friendly kind of way. But I was so proud of myself because that was huge for me, huge, to not want that, need that validation anymore, that craving, to realize that if someone just likes me for this show or whatever, that I'm more than that, you know, like when people might guys might say stuff or what, nothing against you guys, you all look wonderful, but I'm just saying in my experience, like the men and stuff that were in my life were just not healthy at all. But for me to actually stand up and say, no, I deserve more. I am smart. I am, you know, and all of these things and affirmations help a lot. If you don't listen to those, then I highly suggest that you do. I mean, and basically it's just the same stuff every day. I got into another relationship last February. And I thought I had time because it'd been over a year. And I thought I had time and I was ready and everything was good. And he wasn't one of us, but he was a coda guy. And then his ex-wife was an alcoholic. And so anyways, long story short, for months eventually, I stopped doing what I was supposed to do. He slid into that codependent take care of me. I always have something wrong with me. And it's just the toxic cycle was just insane. And I stopped going to meetings. I stopped calling people. I was making reasons why I don't need to go to meetings. And the last week and a half has been the hardest emotional pain that I've had to walk through. But dang, man, I didn't have to drink over it. And honestly, that is a miracle for me today. That relationship is, we're working through it. I'm staying there, saving money anyways, but it's actually a lot healthier now that we're just not even together. And it was funny because when my sponsor, and I only have like 2 months, my sponsor, I called her a few days ago, or about a week or so ago. I think Tim had reached out to me again, and I was like, oh, my God, I kind of forgot for a minute, you know, that I was had this service. Not appointment, whatever, you know what I mean. I was being of service right now. And I called my sponsor, and I was like, oh, my God, like, I cannot do this. Like, my life is a shit show. Like, I'm going to have to call him and just tell him or, like, Miss Lisa, like, I'm so sorry, but I can't. And my sponsor was like, okay, Lizzie, first, did you drink over it? No. Secondly, this isn't about you. Okay, so once again, you are not that important. It is about you being of service and a vessel for God to share your experience, strength, and hope, you know, and that's it. And that's really all I can do, you know. And it's crazy how it's only been since last Wednesday that I've been back at meetings, immersing myself in recovery again, to I finally feel like myself. Because my light had dimmed so much, and I realized that, like, I don't want to be that person anymore. So the point is, too, it doesn't matter, I feel like, how much time you might have or, you know, one day, 4.5 years, 8 years. Everything always goes sideways when I stop taking care of myself and I stop doing the things that I learned to do in the beginning. And that's it. You just keep doing the things. And I swear it was so much harder for me to get sober than it was. No, it's so hard for me to stay. It's a lot easier for me to stay sober now than it was to get sober, right? Because I have tools that I've learned from, you know, and when I think of my, you know, my life, I feel like that's why I was saved too, you know, not for me, but to work. I work with other women that have been through a lot of trauma. Because I learned a way to kind of do steps differently in trauma treatment. And, it's just been such an eye-opening experience. Sponsoring someone's like trying to describe a color you've never seen. I mean, it's really hard to explain it until you actually do it. And it's all God. All of this is all God, you know? It's God and His grace, and I'm so grateful that I am still here today. Because I'm very well aware that I shouldn't. But I'm also very well aware that I am here. And that makes me super, super grateful. All right, so it's like a minute over, so I'm just going to read this real quick. From the book, because I love the stories, and this one part at the very end, I never even read the story, so like 2 years ago, all these years, so really good. If you need some reading, read them. But anyways, in this one story, it talks about, as she's saying, this program has provided me, talking about AA, the tools to stay sober through the death of my best friend, or aunt, or other friends that have died from this disease, failed relationships, and good times like birthdays, weddings, and graduations. Life is exponentially better than it ever was before. I'm living out the life I used to fantasize about, and I have a whole lot of work still in front of me. I always will. But I have hope to share and love to give, and I just keep going one day at a time, living this adventure called life. That's it! I'm like, I don't know! Thank you.
Thank you, Leslie, and thank you, Lisa, for allowing me to be of service. That was a great story. Your energy is beautiful. God couldn't have chosen a better vessel. I'm going to ask special guest Paige to come out and give out our tips tonight.
Yes, that one I know. Gosh. Okay, good. Hi again, I'm Paige. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey.
We'd like to do a chip system to mark our time in sobriety. The very special, important chip is that universal white chip of surrender. If you're ready to give up your old way of life and join our way of life, I offer you a chip.
Was the last thing I wanted to do. There ain't no denying the pain you put me through. I thought I knew you so well. Guess I have to blame myself for letting you burn me till I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up, burned out. Turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Sweet talking heartbreaker, you had me believe that you love me, but you gave me one match and gasoline. It all happened so fast, nothing was left but ashes. I should have seen it coming, but I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. There are lessons I'm still learning. Hearts I've broken, are still hurting. Bridges that will keep on burning. And it's all because of you. Things you made me do. I was head down, hellbound, digging that hole in my soul. Got tired, wound up, burned out. The devil turned a good girl into a liar. I didn't come here looking for the light. No, no, I came in here running from the fire. Oh, I didn't come here looking for. Came in here running from the fire.